never went to film school. You know, I just picked up a camera and started running with it. And that basis of like applicating the theory, you know, which I took from martial arts, was very helpful for me.
This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. This is Darren, and I'm here with my co-host, Mike. Today we have a highly requested guest, Emmanuel Manzanares. You might have seen some of his amazing work on YouTube, on the LBP Stunts Chicago YouTube channel, or his work with Chad Stahelski at 8711 Action. He has an extensive filmography, including his work on Logan, Gemini Man, The Mandalorian, and now Harry Haft. Mike, what are some big takeaways from this episode?
Well, you know I'm a huge Logan fan, and you also know that I like to think of myself as something of a movie screenwriter. So hearing him talk about how that relationship between Lara and Logan sort of manifests itself through the action itself throughout the course of the film, that was super interesting to me. And you also know I'm a huge Rocket Jump fanboy. So hearing about his experience with Rocket Jump was also fantastic.
And from my end, I really enjoyed learning about how he learned fight choreography and how he used to watch Police Story on repeat and just slow down the scenes and pause and really try to absorb as much as he could from that. And I also really enjoyed learning about his theater background and that he started in theater and then moved more into martial arts side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So without further ado, here is Emmanuel. Emmanuel, I wanted to introduce you to Mike too, because I know that you guys haven't been introduced yet. And it's kind of just been us talking so far.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
We kind of just want to get into it. We were doing a little bit of research and we saw that your dog mentioned on Instagram that you love to rant about your work.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to let you know, though, that do not hesitate to rant on, because we love that on the podcast.
No worries. Yeah, that's a dog Instagram run by my wife. And so I think it's half my dog, half my wife. You know?
Yeah. Your dog seems very supportive, though, of your career.
Yeah. No, he's definitely been there. We got him when he was like 2 years old. And then, yeah, he's been through it all. So.
Oh, really? I see you have two dogs, actually.
Kind of a sad story. We had to let one of them go, the black dog, Layla.
Oh,
because I was just on the road so much. And, you know, my wife is dealing with it by herself. And we have a small child now. And so it was rough. I think right before I did Bloodshot, right before I went to Cape Town, we had let her go to the local shelter. And then luckily, within the month, she was super popular because she's a sweetheart. And so she was picked up by a family there.
Wow.
And that's it. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it was just a lot of work with everything going on.
Yeah. You know, just one person dealing with technically three kids. So.
Yeah, I definitely understand. I guess we were going to ask you about your kid too, because I know Scott also has a kid, two kids, I think, now as well. We asked him this, but we were wondering, does your kid consider you a ninja dad at the moment, or does he kind of know what's going on?
They do. Like, actually, I have my family with me right now, and I'm specifically in Toronto, and it's the first time I've had them with me, because normally my wife's at home, and I'm kind of away because the work gets very hectic. But this time, just with, you know, the current situation with COVID and everything, I was just very lucky to bring them along and have them here with me. And they're kind of getting a taste of, you know, the coworkers I have, which are, some of them are my friends, and just like the editing I have to do with doing vizzes and stuff. So it's, they're slowly understanding about, you know, movies and different things. So she kind of calls the collective these stunts guys, you know, like that's how she sees it. So it's really funny, but it's very endearing, because if anything, it's very much more interested and curious just about the process, you know, because to her.
So you think that there's like an interest there being passed down?
Yeah, but it's definitely something, like, I made it pretty clear to most of my friends and family. It's, I don't want them to get into the business, you know, unless that's what they really, really want to do. If they like develop a love for it eventually and that's what they want to pursue, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely not one of those dads that's like, you really should do it. You know, because,
Is it just because of like the nature of the business and how difficult it is, or?
And you know, I think also too, just being in it, I've been in it now for almost 15 years, just kind of from doing indie stuff and, you know, now professionally, but I really wanted to do it. And obviously I still do, but now being in it for a while, it's very much like there's easier ways to make money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
and unless
definitely.
You really, really want to pursue it.
You have to love
it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Because there's a lot of ups and downs. It doesn't matter what position you are in this business. You know, there's so many ups and downs and you meet a lot of great people. You deal with a lot of whatever people, and it's just the nature of what it is. But absolutely, you know, it's something that I believe if you really want to do it, you know, you'll find a way. And that's what I did. But if you are just doing it because it's like a cool thing to do, or you kind of want to dabble in it, I'm like, okay, sure. You know, but there's much easier ways to make money or have fun, you know?
Yes. Very wise. And let me just say, whatever people is a very nice way to put it.
Totally.
And I was also curious because I know you have sort of a theater background.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. I got into theater. I went to UIC, which is the University of Illinois in Chicago. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm originally from. And I went there for about 5 years or so. And I only went to the theater program because at the time, you know, everybody was like, well, you should do film, you know, because I had been talking since high school about doing kind of being like a stuntman and doing action films and things like that. And there's a big school in Chicago known as Columbia College, and they're like the big art school, you know.
Yeah.
And so everybody was like, you should go there. They have a great film program. And I'm like, I feel like that's like the thing to do, right? And I'm always somebody that goes against the grain.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of directors that I admired, like Scorsese or Spielberg or Kubrick, you know, they have a very small or an extensive theater background because they started off doing a lot of grunt work, you know, and not necessarily learning to be an actor, but just learning how to talk to actors, right? Because they figured, well, that's like the basis for a lot of film acting is theater. So if they took it upon themselves to learn a production side of it, and an acting side of it, that would help kind of bridge that gap, you know? And
right.
I thought that was a pretty astute way of thinking about it. So I was like, yeah, let me do theater. And so I went into theater, and for a while I was double majoring. So originally I did directing and design, which is what I eventually graduated with, but I was doing acting because the same basis, I wanted to see how extensive it was and what's really asked of you, you know, what it goes into, like scene study and just from script writing to then understanding that piece as a character, as an actor. But I never really wanted to do acting. You know, once I really got into the thick of it, I was like, oh no, I'm not very good at this. But it was very interesting to do. And I really credit a lot of that background kind of double dipping for me to understand like what actors really have to go through, especially with physical acting, especially with doing fights and action. And then talking to them and getting emotions out of them in their body language, which is really important, especially on film, you know, because...
Yeah, a lot of stunt work is acting involved as well, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think having that background in theater, because also too in theater, I started learning how to be what's considered like a fight captain or fight director, you know, for stage. But that helped because you're working with all these people that are not martial artists. Most of them are not technically physical or athletic, you know, that's not the basis of their acting. So getting performances out of them to be certain characters in, you know, very classical plays or like pre-modern era plays was very interesting for me to help me again with like body language and things. So when you talk to a stunt person or an actor on set, you have a basis of where to take it from, you know, instead of just physically being like, move here, do this, do that, you know.
Yeah. And so you were already into martial arts once you got to theater?
Yes. I had been doing martial arts since about 7 years old, you know, officially like in a class. I was learning how to box since I was like five or so, but I wasn't in a like physical classroom, you know, until about 7 years old when I started learning karate. And then I did that for a few years and I kind of dabbled in a couple of different, you know, martial arts until about, I want to say 14. I took a break because it was basically between doing well in high school and doing well in martial arts, you know, and of course I wanted to do well in martial arts, but my mom at the time was like, you need to make a choice because you're not doing great in school. So yeah, I took a break from there. And since then, I mean, I've been very lucky to dabble with different friends and different instructors, but I haven't really been in a class system probably since a teenager, you know?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So. Interesting. So I was also going to ask, and I guess this sort of ties into it, would you say that college, at least nowadays, is worth it for someone who's looking to get into film?
Yes and no. And I only say that from my experience. I don't want to like cast a terrible thing on college or anything like that. It's obviously there for a reason. The reason why I say yes and no is because in theater, obviously, like it got to a point where I was gravitating more towards film. I was taking what I had as a basis, but really I was going to go and use it for film. And so what I would do in between college is I was starting to shoot, you know, little fights and little shorts with my friends. And I started learning how to do film that way. I never went to film school. You know, I just picked up a camera and started running with it. And that basis of like applicating the theory, you know, which I took from martial arts was very helpful for me. But at the time I also realized like doing these, I guess, systems and methods that, you know, had a traditional base, but I was going to apply to it. And I guess when I would try to ask the questions of like, hey, I hear what you're saying here, but what do you think about applying it to there? A lot of people are very dismissive of that because it's like, oh, well, that's not what it's meant for. It's like, I understand, but I'm also interested in wondering, well, how could that be applied? You know, like an acting technique or a directing technique for stage. Like, I understand the blocking works this way for stage. Well, could that potentially be used for film? Or, you know, if I'm on this perspective, could that be used that way? And so what I just found is a lot of people were not too open to that. Very few teachers, I guess, unless they had a film background, ironically, you know, they would be open to suggesting, well, play with this and try that. And so in that sense, I don't know if going to film school for me, I would have encountered the same problems, because I would assume in a similar way, you know, you're stuck or limited by the film's curriculum, right? The school's curriculum.
Yeah.
So unless you're kind of doing things outside that narrative, you're going to get, again, people that come at it in a perspective that's like, well, here's my basis on this from my limited knowledge, but they themselves are also not pursuing it, right? Like, obviously I'm doing a niche thing, doing action. But yeah, I guess that's really it. It's like, if it benefits you, the only thing I would really say from my perspective is, you know, I had to learn a lot of these techniques backwards. But the other end is that I learned them practically. So when you're on a set, everything is practical, you know? So everything now, if you're on a big set and you need to find solutions on the, you know, on the fly, run and gun, you can kind of go back to that independent filmmaking aspect.
Those roots.
You have to, right. But you have to communicate that to everyone, so they're on the same page and understand, you know, in every kind of term, from lighting to camera, you know, to props to set, so everything runs smoothly and you can make your day, which was a big thing that I learned doing independent things. It's like, well, you're structured by the light, right? But now you add all these elements. And in a film school, of course, they teach you all these things and they put those perspectives in there. But I feel like they don't really teach you the basis of whatever happens, you have to make your day. You know, like whatever you do, you really need to know where you're going to start, where you're going to end, why that's imperative, and what's the goal of the day, as opposed to, I want to do three scenes today. That's fantastic. However, what if you can only do one?
What's it wasn't the goal? Like, you know, urgent like, enough, I guess. Yeah,
exactly. So I guess that's a big thing that I took away from not doing school. But either way, I really appreciated the time. And if I basically put it this way, if I had never done it, I don't think I would have learned the lessons I would have learned. So I'm still very appreciative for the time I did.
Yeah. So what would you say is like the one biggest thing like that you took away from college, I guess?
It's definitely working with other people that don't have your passion in what you want to do. You know what I mean? It's not even that they're not passionate as you. It's really just in what you want to do. You know, of course,
right. I'm a big... Not in that niche, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm a big action nerd and, you know, martial arts film nerd and a film nerd in general. But at the same time, like, I had to really embrace, you know, I'd never read a lot of plays. I learned a lot from reading a lot of different plays and scriptures. And at the same time, talking and bridging my love for what I do to other people's loves. Because some people, you know, are not martial artists at all. They don't care for it or athletic or whatever have you. Yeah. Some people have a certain, you know, a stereotype of martial arts as well. So it's like, well, how do you bridge that? How do you get on their level or make them see what level you want them to be, you know, and also inspire them to do what you want to do in that sense? Because some people don't want to be physical at all, or some people want to be too physical, you know. It's always a balance. So that really taught me how to take myself out of the equation. And then also doing the independent stuff with my friends, it's like, well, they're martial artists, but then that's the other end, right? It's like, they're helping me to help me as friends. They're not necessarily like, oh, this is my career, I want to do this.
You exactly.
know? So it's the back and forth. It's like, how do I bring the acting out of these guys that are not actors, you know? Mm-hmm. And how do I bring the intention of the action from these actors that are not athletic or martial artists, you know? And how do I find that bridge together? So that was a huge thing that I took away from doing theater.
Yeah, I think I find it kind of funny that you and Michael Lear kind of have this theater background. And yeah. Michael Lear was also talking about infusing action into some of the plays that he was doing.
Totally. Yeah. No, you know, we had a lot of combos like that, which is, it's funny because it's true. It's like, we'd always find some way, because we're those kinds of guys, you know, to be like, oh, I wonder if this could be a little more.
Yeah. Yeah, he really just added that, you know, that extra step to most of those plays, the sword fights and whatnot, I think he was talking about.
Yeah, it's awesome. And speaking of Michael Lear, and you're talking about like working with other people, things like that, can you tell us a little bit about LBP Chicago that you're sort of founded and started up?
Yeah. So LBP, for those who don't know, it stands for Lazy Brown Productions, which is a kind of a, it's a funny, like, you know, the story behind that is my friend and I, he is Puerto Rican and Filipino, and we were high school friends, and he really wanted to be like a screenwriter and director eventually. So he was kind of writing all these little ideas and stuff. We're in high school. And so as we grew up together, he made a joke based off like another comedian's act that he saw. It basically was like, oh, it'd be really funny if, you know, we come up and then, yeah, if like, you know, you and I, or you yourself, we create this production company called Lazy Brown Productions, right? Because it's the, you know, stereotype of minorities, right? That they're all lazy, especially from the Latino variety. You know, we kind of laughed about it. We're like, oh, ha, ha, ha. But it was definitely a thing when I started working with my other friends from high school that went to the same high school as me. And they were either Asian or Latino or a mix. And we kind of thought of that idea, and we're like, you know, it's just us, right? It's funny, so we'll keep it. But then eventually it stuck, you know, and as I became more professional, well, obviously I couldn't use Lazy Brown Productions, but I shortened it to LBP. And so when people would ask, like, well, what's that stand for? I'm like, well, you know, it is what it is. But
did you make up something? Or
no, I just told them, you know, it was like, it's Lazy Brown Productions. And they all had a laugh. Like, I remember when I first met Chet Stahelski, and he was talking with myself and another two members, Sean Brunel and Brendan Huer. He was like, what do you guys call yourself again? The Lazy Boys? What's that called? And I told him, and he's like, yeah, it's funny. Good for you guys.
And yeah, as two Asian dudes, I think we really appreciate that. That's, you
know, yeah.
So yeah, I know. So that's what it is. Like, I think all the minorities that I've talked to that have asked, they get a good laugh out of it, you know, because they understand, oh, I see, you're playing against a stereotype. But totally, that group, I started in like unofficially like 2003. I had done all these stage kind of combat shows, martial arts demos with a couple of my friends, like I said. And around 2005, because I was inspired. I used to visit this website called The Stun People, and that was started by a gentleman named Eric Jacobus. And then from there, I had originally known about Eric and another gentleman, Vlad Rinberg, through this site called Project J, which was like this old nerdy site about everything Jackie Chan. And not just everything Jackie Chan, but everything like, oh, did you know Jackie used stunt doubles? Oh, look at these frames and look at these, you know, like it was kind of one of the first sites to break down like, hey, this guy isn't doing everything, but he's so smart about showing it that you can't tell. But like,
yeah, it's hidden.
Yeah, whoever ran the site would do all these screen grabs. And so he had a forum, and in the forum would be all these guys, you know, breaking down these fights, kind of like what you see nowadays on YouTube, right? But like all these different guys, including myself, would read different people's theories or like maybe they did this or maybe this guy was in this movie. So anyway, Eric and Vlad would post a lot, and they eventually started posting fights in themselves because they're like, hey, we like Jackie and Samuel and a lot of these other guys, you know, we just picked up a camera and started shooting fights. And at the time, it was like endearing, you know, they're not great, but you're like, oh, it's cool. These guys are just like in their backyards using their friends and they're making up fights. That's cool, you know, and you'd watch them. But over the years, they'd eventually get better. And you're like, oh, shit, it's starting to look good, you know. So that inspired
me. It's starting to look like the movies.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it so inspired me to do the same thing. And that's what I did. I took five of my friends and, you know, we would like train in the parks or train in my backyard or something like that. And then that's where we'd shoot, like in alleys and parks and, you know, garages at night and things like that, just trying to do totally the same thing. And the first 2-3 years, it was okay. Like 2005, we shot stuff. We'll never see the light of day. You know, 2006, we got the courage to be like, okay, let's post it up, you know, like pre-YouTube. And then once YouTube hit, it was an easier way to share things. And yeah, somewhere around like middle end of 2007, things started to click for us a little more, just in terms of like getting the Hong Kong style flow, which was like our basis, like a lot of these other guys I spoke of. And
right, the beats, yeah.
And yeah, like also, you know, Korean cinema was really starting to branch off in its own way, you know, like 2003 onward. So right. We're like, oh, what if we added these elements too to like make it more impactful, but kind of have the Hong Kong flavor. So we were figuring all these things out. And then I guess that's just what really like, we were just consistent about it. You know, over time, we gathered other people to that were more into the career aspect of it. You know, like eventually the five friends that I spoke of, you know, they were like, hey, it's like, you've gotten your guys, you know, like go for it and you know, go and run with it. So they're very supportive. And yeah, like the team that's there now, a lot of them started off, you know, as people that were interested, whether they be martial artists or dancers or actors. And then they grew into it. And now, you know, they're all working stunt people. And that's really what it eventually became. It was never really like a group. It was more of a collective. You know, I was very big about not necessarily letting anyone and everyone in, but whoever came in, like as long as you showed a consistency in training and approach and just being open to everything. Yeah. Then it's like, yeah, you know, use whatever we, you know, build together for yourself or help us or whatever, you know, there's no like, oh, you have to do this or do that. I was just very like open door about it. And that's really what it is now. It's like, because of that group and because of what we've done, we've all branched out into our own different methods and ways. But whenever we work together, it's like, you know, it's always been, which is really cool.
Yeah. And I'm also kind of curious because I actually saw an interview where you talked about your learning process and how you used to watch like Police Story in like slow motion just to try to learn like the choreography and the editing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm just kind of wondering now, like, do you have like an exact way on how you learn things, like learn additional things? And like, hypothetically, if you were to, I guess, create, an action filmmaking fully online course, just using materials from the internet, like where would you start?
I always tell everyone I'm not a great teacher, so that's probably a terrible question for me.
Okay.
No. But really, it's like, well, the way that I learn is a very specific way, right? And really what I tell people, because I've gotten this question quite a lot, and so I tried to, over the years, broaden the terms, but I would say for me, a big thing is repetition. Like I completely embrace whatever the nuances, the technique or something that I try to learn. And I rep it and rep it and rep it in many different ways. Not even just like hard or soft. Like I mix it up. I figure out, let's say, the length of something, you know, yeah, all the different variations of it. And I keep kind of repping the same thing. And then eventually, once it's repped a specific amount of times, let's say, and that feels good to me, I will then go and figure out the application of what this technique is. You know, how much of it that works for me? Does it work in this situation? Does it not work in that situation? You know, like I kind of put myself out there and be open to make the mistakes that I make. And then from, again, learning those mistakes, I then continue to refine the same technique over and over. And that's really how I learn, you know, like almost anything. And that I think that comes from doing martial arts and, you know, learning forms and doing sparring and things like that, like understanding what works for me and what doesn't work for me, you know. And also I've just been very lucky to have teachers that push me to learn the applications behind things as opposed to just the straight theory or just the straight movement, you know, which is nothing wrong or nothing against anybody that is that way. But I've just been very lucky to be around practitioners that have shown me the forms and movements and theory and then have also shown me the applications, but then go, well, you know, go see what works for you. This is what works for me. I've shown you a door. Mm-hmm. Now it's on you to go through the door and figure out, does it still work for you? You know, check in again, like every couple of years, kind of things like that. And that's really how I've taken filmmaking. You know, when I started learning how to shoot and edit, that's why I would kind of religiously watch, like you were saying, Police Story or a couple of different Hong Kong films in slow motion, because I was really like, well, how do they break down setting up frames or how to, you know, where's the edit point? And I think all of us, I'm sure you guys have seen Jackie Chan, My Story, where he obviously talks about his whole process. And then in My Stunts, you know, going further into it with the action filmmaking side of it. So that kind of basis, and then talking with all these other indie guys at the time that were doing very similar things, really helped form my base. And then from there, I just kind of took it and ran with it the ways I wanted. And over time, it really became less about action filmmaking and much more about filmmaking. You know, like I started taking the influences and nuances of other directors and other films that you wouldn't necessarily equate with action, you know, to enhance the action that I already have, because it just really made me think more like, oh, this is, besides it being so specific, you can make it anything. And that, I guess to me, like, that's the biggest thing I learned watching someone like Jackie over the years, is like, is the reason why his action transcends is because it's pure filmmaking as opposed to action filmmaking. You know what I mean? Like, he is letting in everyone in the party to be excited and to enjoy, you know, as opposed to just making his films for a niche market. You know, that's how he started, like everybody else did, but over time he's, you know, revered and just really enjoyed by anyone, right, all ages, because he's made his films that way, and it shows in his progression. So yeah, that's, I mean, for me, it's really just about repetition and taking it slow and just constant refinement over and over, you know, anything and everything.
Yeah, that, I feel like that's such a major through line through everything we're saying today and some other interviews too, with just applying that martial arts learning philosophy to filmmaking, and that super Bruce Lee sort of philosophy too, about just breaking down those walls and taking things from wherever, making something that's greater than the sum of its parts.
Yes, that's so true. And again, I'm not knocking teachers or curriculums, but there's been so few teachers that I've kind of heard that everybody is really about, you have to fit this certain structure, which I totally get. Yeah. But I think it's greater when someone says, absolutely, learn the structure, learn the base. I will give you steps to understand how the base can be expanded or contracted. And then at a certain point, it's on you to shape that base for yourself.
Yeah. You know, like, you have the freedom. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that's such an empowering thing. And that's a big thing too, that if I do ever teach someone or try to help them in their journey, that's a big thing that I tell them, is not, you know, my way is not necessarily the way, it's a way. But even within that way, hopefully you can use what I've shown you to your benefit, you know, and make it your own thing, because that's ultimately what it should be. You shouldn't be a carbon copy of me. If anything, you should take the best of me and make it that much better for you. You know, that's why, at least what I've learned from the teachers I've been able to be with.
See, again, very wise. I love it. And so when you are given that freedom in the field and you're faced with that blank canvas of a blank fight scene, right, waiting to be filled, what is it that you're drawing inspiration from? Where do you start? I know you mentioned before that using music sometimes can really help you with that.
Mm-hmm. I generally have a song in my head, at least when I'm doing my own work. When I'm doing other people's work, you know, it's tough because you want to be not as neutral as possible, but you want to show them something broad initially to get them excited, right? I kind of liken it to cuisine. Like, you want to give them an appetizer for them to get interested. And then you can kind of lead them into the course you want to go to, right? And then from, let's say, whatever the entree ends up being, they will then give you a critique on it, right? A review. So for example, if you have a viz, you have to do a scene is, you know, hero A has to fight villain B. They're fighting in this area. That's it, right? It's very generic, or it can be very specific. It's the same setup, but they might be, oh, they're fighting in an area that is enclosed. At a certain point, this other character enters or whatever have you. So generally when I take something like that, you want to create the basis around what are the goals in the scene, right? Like, why does the hero enter? Why does the villain enter? Or is the villain there or whatever have you? Why does the other person enter or not, right? Like, and then from there, what really happens? Yes, the hero may win or the villain may win, but why, right? Like, what's in the script and the scene from there? And then from there, you just kind of fill in the blanks in that way. And filling in the blanks is just the choreography. But you want to bring everyone in on the same journey. And that, for me, that's the biggest thing, is not necessarily creating the most exciting moments therefrom. You might have an idea or a movement you want to do, but again, it's kind of like that Jackie approach. It's like, well, does that moment fit within this context of this scene? You know, because if not, we can put it somewhere else. But I feel like if you read the script and you kind of take the initial goals and basis of the scene, the moments eventually happen. You know, like, it's natural, like music. You know, eventually you'll feel the drop, or you'll hear the bridge, or things will pick up and then it'll transition. You know, it kind of happens organically. And that's really the way too that I like to design or work with others to design. It's very much like jazz. Like, I may set it up and then someone else may kind of take it and run with it, and I may refine it. And then, you know, same kind of things. They may set it up, I may take it and refine it. And so for me, that's a big thing. Designing is just making sure that there's enough broad strokes initially, so that way when we present it to production, they have their notes as they will, but you want to give them enough freedom that it's, they want to input the notes and you kind of see where it's at. And then from there, you can start refining and refining. But normally you don't want to cater too much, you know, because it's also like remodeling a house, right? If you ask somebody to come paint your house and then they're clear about the colors that you're going to use, and you go and do it, if they in between are like, oh, you know, can I add an extra sheen here? Oh, can I add extra coat there? You have to be also firm about yes and no and why. Because if you keep saying yes to everything, you're going to backlog yourself. Yeah. And then they're like, it's not done. Why is it taking so long?
Yeah.
Right. Or if you say no to everything, they're also like, you're not very collaborative, you know? So I don't really want to work with you. So it is a fine line of figuring out what it is. But at the end of the day, I like to just remind myself that it's not your movie, and that's okay. If anything, because it's not your movie, help them sell the movie they want to sell. And then within your experience or expertise, just show them what the potential pratfalls could be and why.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it's on you to, you know, help facilitate and figure out what they want to do with it.
Yeah, try to gently steer them in that direction.
Yeah, or sometimes, you know, not gently, because sometimes you might be inspired to be like, you know what, here it is. And I think that's okay to do, as long as you present them again, whether with an option or a doorway to that, you know, script version, or like you said, like their kind of vision. I think it's okay to present both sides, but if you do one or the other too much, then you're kind of putting yourself in a corner, and that's what you want to avoid.
Right, right. And I know we're also talking choreography right now, but a big part of choreography is also camera work. And I'm kind of wondering what separates like a good good stunt camera work versus great stunt camera work in your eyes.
Question. I think a great stunt camera work is that the camera is like anything else, a seamless part of the scene, right? It doesn't take you out of the scene. It enhances what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I always liken it to watching animation of any kind, not just even anime, but
animation.
Any kind of animation in general, right? Because animation, I've always feel ever since growing up, they're so keen on delivering such key moments, you know, because you got to think about it. It's being sold generally for kids. Now you have animation of all ages, but especially when you watch like good children's animation that transcends the age range.
Yeah,
kind of like Pixar, oh man, like
stuff. Yeah,
yeah. Pixar. I was just watching. You know, I hadn't seen it in a while, but I was just watching Coraline, for example,
and it's all stop motion. Yes.
And again, it's the storytelling within the frames that they use, and I think that's so wonderful because you learn a lot, not just seeing it from the child's perspective, but seeing it now as an older adult, understanding what's going on. You know, and I feel like, again, all these things that you wouldn't necessarily put together for action works for action because there is drama involved, whether there's, you know, comedy or pure drama, a tragedy or horror, whatever have you, there's still drama involved in that scene. So the more you use the camera to be a tool to elevate the scene, I think that's what makes it great because you can, there's so many people that shoot action so well nowadays, you know, like,
yeah.
I feel like almost anybody now has been shooting, whether you want to say it's great or not, good action. It's there.
Okay.
It's presented. You can see the athleticism in things. But I think, again, as most things evolve, right, it's like the difference between not everyone's going to be Bruce Lee, right? You can't just hold the camera back and let this person do their thing but have the charisma behind it. Mm-hmm. You have to find ways that make it interesting for everyone because not
make
everyone
it look good. Bruce,
totally. Or a Jackie, right? Like not everyone is going to do the frame like a Buster Keaton and look amazing doing it and have an amazing team, you know, like you have to find unique ways to sell that. I always look at Korean cinema as a great example of that because Korean cinema is very good about bringing the drama behind the intention behind the movement and they'll change their frames or, you know, they'll change their whole structure of shots and things like that to get the best moments out of it. And a lot of times you don't always necessarily see the choreography, but you feel it. And I think that's something, again, very important. You know, people should feel what you're presenting, like acting, right? You should feel the words as opposed to being presented the words literally, you know? So camera should enhance that for sure.
And what examples of Korean cinema are you, I guess, could you recommend to the audience?
I was just going to ask that.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up on a lot of the older Korean cinema that came out. And of course, you know, you have stuff like everyone references Old Boy. But I grew up Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance is a great film that has very minimal action when it does have it. But then as, you know, you see it, it's like that's the basis for something like Old Boy. And then there's Lady Vengeance, of course. There's Memories of Murder, the Bong Joon-ho film. That's like one of my favorite movies of all time. Mainly because, again, the way that he structures the tension and the action between the characters. So when there is action involved, you feel it. But when you look at it literally, like from a choreographer standpoint, it's super simple. And that's almost always what it is, right? It's very simple, but it's just the way it's presented that's very effective. If you look at like, I'm trying to think of off the top of my head. Crying Fist is another great one by the director that did City of Violence. Crying Fist is about two boxers that, you know, they have two different storylines eventually intertwine. But again, it's like the way he does boxing in that film, it's nothing innovative in the sense of what he's literally doing. But what's innovative about it is you care about the characters. So by the time they fight, you're invested in the characters. And the
stakes are high.
Exactly. The stakes are higher. But at the same time, the camera work, the acting, the presentation all enhances that stake and intention behind everything. So you're immersed into it, you know, and that's another fantastic film. A Bittersweet Life is another great one. Good, Bad, the Weird is another great one. Like there's a lot of really well done Korean films that
with great action
and have great action, or they're dramas that just happen to have those elevated great action moments within them, yeah. You know, that keep you invested. So yeah, I would recommend any of those early films, because a lot of them I want to say are pre 2010 that I've just said.
Ah, I see.
We got homework now. I'm excited. Yeah. I know what I'm doing this weekend. And I'd actually also love to jump back to martial arts a little bit, because mm-hmm. I'm a lifelong martial artist too. I love that stuff. And I know you've talked about sort of bending martial arts for the purpose of choreography. Can you talk a little bit about that and maybe like some examples that you or choreographers in general will normally do to do that?
Yeah. I think a big thing about that, again, I've learned from like Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung. Even there's a Korean stunt coordinator choreographer, Jung Doo Hung, that has done that. Like these three guys that I've really looked at over the years. If you look at Jackie, it's very, you know, dance oriented, and it's very showmanship and entertainment oriented, right? Mm-hmm. But it's for the basis of where his character is going. So even if he has martial artists, they kind of fit that motif. Whereas Sammo tends to really have people fight. But within the real fighting, again, you find more about these characters as they continue to fight, right? And the styles are very distinct. And with Jung Doo Hung, because he created the Korean cinema action style, so it's much more emotional, and it's much more about what are the stakes being raised within the fight. So again, within these characters fighting, who starts trumping who based on what's they're reacting to each other. So what's really happening? But ultimately, the in-between for all those three is the action-reaction. So I feel like with martial arts, if you take that basis of it, of course, you can keep your set style. And depending on the film, you can be really technical and very, you know, articulate about that style. Or you can be very, you know, general and generic, depending on the type. But I still feel like you can kind of use a little bit of everything. Even if, let's say, the person does Kali or Jiu-Jitsu, you can use aspects of karate or kung fu, because these kind of two styles have been around for so long, right? Or boxing in film. And you can mm-hmm. take the aspect of, let's say, grappling, expound upon it, so it's not always super literal. Because if you're going to make it very literal, then the camera has to follow what's going on. And I feel like you have to tell a little bit more of a story within the camera work, so the audience can follow along, right? Because it's like UFC. If you look at UFC, a lot of people watch it to basically see a knockout, more or less, right? People mm-hmm. now understand more about like what is, you know, jiu-jitsu and arm locks and rear naked chokes and leg locks and things like that. But even then, it's not like they really understand the difference between an ankle lock, a knee bar, a heel hook. You know what I mean? Like, so
right.
They're much more about, oh, look, that guy can't get out. Oh, he's going to tap. Oh, you know, that guy's getting knocked out. That's always what they're about. So a general audience is going to look at a fight very similar. And I feel like if you're too stuck in the literal aspect of martial arts, you're losing the point of the scene. Because again, is the scene really about the martial arts? And if it is, shouldn't we still be invested with the characters and less about the martial art? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a boxing film. Yes, they're boxing. And of course, the boxing can be technical and articulate, but it's still about the two people fighting. At a certain point, it shouldn't really be about the boxing, you know? And humanly, if you want to show the human aspect of it, humanly, they're not perfect fighters. Or if they are throughout the scene, you have to show signs of fear or doubt or weakness or strength, you know? Like, you can't just constantly show that only through pure fighting. You have to kind of find the balance in between. So I feel a lot of times, you know, you have to make things bigger than what they are for camera, which is what you'll see a lot, even within, let's say, the grappling arts. You see that now in John Wick. Like, a lot of the grappling arts are bigger than what they are because they have to be. But that's also how they're able to pull back the camera to show the technique. So I think if you take the basis of what the techniques are and you maintain the integrity, you know, for me, the difference between opening and closing your body is kind of irrelevant. You know, like, you don't have to be so stuck on like, oh, well, you know, in judo, he would never open his body that big before he comes and, you know,
Yeah. Does his little gari,
and it's like, well, who cares? He's doing the little technique smoothly. You see it. that's what the audience is going to resonate with. They're not going to care if you have a lapel grip versus a wrist grip versus, you know what I mean? Like, no one's going to care. And that's okay too. So I feel like, yeah, if you get too stuck on the literal, you lose the audience. And at that point, it's like, who are you making it for? You know, I think you always have to remind yourself, like, if you're going to make it for the martial arts nerds, absolutely go nuts and you know, kill it. And there's tons of films that will speak to that. I think that's a great audience. That's the same kind of audience that I grew up doing. But at the same time, if you're going to reach a broader audience, you have to fit the broader standards. But that should challenge you to now be like, well, how do I make this martial arts accessible to my grandparents, my parents, my family? Mm. You know, and I feel like that's something, again, if we go back to our heroes, Bruce did really well. Jackie did really well. You know, Stallone or Bruce Willis or Arnold Schwarzenegger did really well, because at a certain point, you're looking at the hero and really not necessarily what he does, you know, unless it's a big moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting because going back to our episode with Michael Lear, he was just talking about how, I guess, practical application of martial arts doesn't exactly sell the same on screen, if that makes it. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. So you have to find out what looks best on camera, I guess.
Totally. Totally. And it is so much an R&D process. Even if you find what does work, it may not always be necessarily what the director of production is still looking for. You know, it's like, for example, you've seen karate a million different ways on film. You've seen kung fu a million different ways on film. Now you're starting to see Filipino martial arts, you know, or CQC kind of fighting shown in different ways. You're starting to see judo, obviously, jiu-jitsu shown in many different ways. I think that's all great, because I feel like a lot of us in our generation forget that, you know, especially for kung fu films, they've been doing those kinds of films since the 50s and 60s, and they didn't really start to find and boomed until the 70s, right? And then Jackie started to change that with Sammo in the late 70s to the 80s. So it's like everyone's seeing what kung fu is now, or, you know, what even I guess modern fighting is now. It's like there's so much that has changed. So now jiu-jitsu and judo and all these other grappling arts, or even like silat or all these other esoteric Southeast Asian arts, they're starting to kind of see that growth and evolution cinematically. I think that's good to have, because if you keep it so practical and literal, I think that's only okay in only very specific kinds of films. If you did that for every kind of fighting, well, then you don't really have the draw on the audience anymore. You know, like, totally. Basically, if you would put a John Wick style in, let's say, a Scorsese film, that may be interesting. But if you did that for every Scorsese film, you're like going, what's happening with Scorsese? You know, like...
What's going through his head?
Exactly. You know, so I think something like what Chad's doing, he's evolving and growing that action audience, but he's also very clear that I know what I'm catering to. I want to take you on this journey. It's entertainment. This is why I keep upping the stakes or making things very grandiose, you know, but you even hear him saying, I'd love to do a movie that's against that grain eventually, you know, because why wouldn't it, right? Show the other side of it. So yeah, I think if you're too stuck being literal and practical, that only works if it fits the story in the scenes. Otherwise, you're kind of, you're fighting an uphill battle for really what reason? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And with that, I kind of want to dive into more specific breakdowns of some of the work that you've done. I know you've worked on Yo Soy Un Hombre Loco, which you've talked about a couple times, and it's actually won several awards. But I think the biggest thing that stood out to me was you talking about your relationship with Vlad. I think my question is, what are some of like the biggest lessons you learn about, I guess, partnership when working with Vlad, and what are some aspects of effective partnerships?
Working with him, you know, that was a guy, again, talking about like indie perspectives between Eric Jacobs and Vlad Rimberg. Those were kind of like my two indie heroes, you know, growing up in this indie business initially. Because before there was another group called Zero Gravity, and those had guys like Aaron Tony and Latif Crowder and Sam Locke, Alex Wynn, and there's another group called Real Kick, which had Sam Hargrave and their hair is Daniel Stevens. So these guys were kind of already in professional stunts at the time. So that they were like the highest echelon to a lot of us, but it's not like they were the most accessible, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Because you're like, oh, one day I'd like to be that, maybe. You know, those guys have made it. But like Vlad and Eric, we would like talk on, you know, AOL Messenger and things like that, you know, just be like, hey, what are you doing today? Or how are you doing this? So they were more accessible. So to me, those were kind of my heroes. And when I started working with both of them, and then especially Vlad, like I quickly realized that, you know, it's almost like Vlad and I are cut from the same cloth, but we have two distinct ways of approaching things. And of course, you know, we have growing pains in doing that. He has a certain way and I have a certain way. And what we eventually realized as we started working together, like on previses or choreographing together for other coordinators, we would realize, well, at the end of the day, it's like what I just said, right? About what's the goal of the scene? What's the goal of the coordinator in production? And how can we effectively help each other to do that? You know, it's kind of like, let your ego go away. Because ultimately, if we make each other look good, everybody looks good, right? And that also goes in line with making my own work. Is like, if I make the team look good, they will inherently make me look good. If I'm so worried about looking good, quote unquote, and just putting so much pressure and emphasis on the team and not explaining or guiding them, then really what's the worth of all of that pressure and, you know, quote unquote passion, if at the end of it all, the result is kind of okay, or if it is good, it's like, did it really need to be done for that time frame? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the real benefit for everyone? So I think between Vlad and I, we just quickly realized like whoever's going to take the lead takes it, and then whoever's supporting supports. So that way, at the end of the day, we're both going to look good and it's fine. You know, like sometimes he takes the credit, sometimes I take credit, sometimes we take the credit. But at the end of it all, I feel like we both learned a lot from each other, because the more that I supported him and opened up to his process, you know, wholeheartedly, there's tons of things I learned. And then I would go and shoot my own things and be like, oh man, I learned this thing from him. I'm going to try it this way, or, you know, I'm going to figure it out and see how it works for me. And that's really how I've taken, again, even learning from other coordinators, the same kind of approach. They have a certain distinct style and method they use. And the more that I've embraced it, the more that I felt I've been able to grow. So I feel like that's what really makes a good partnership, is just being clear, being open, but respecting one another's talents and just understanding, you know, like it doesn't matter who takes the lead. What really matters is how you both get there together, you know, because you'll both get there together at some point. And when you break apart for whatever reason, and not like in a bad way, just, you know, it's normal, right? Someone may want to do a different kind of project. Someone may want to pursue a different kind of production or whatever have you. You still want that help and guidance from that partner. In some way, you may check in with them and say, hey, you know, this is what I'm dealing with. What do you think is a good approach? Which is something, again, that Vlad and I still both do to this day, whether we work together or not. I will still come to him and say, you know, here's what I'm thinking. Is this a good method? Or what would you think? Because it's always nice to have that counsel from someone that's in the same boat as you, you know?
Yeah, it definitely shows. And so if we could dive in a little bit too about the short itself, can you talk about what the process was like? I know that, you know, the writing for it is definitely, it shows a creative sort of storyline and turn in the story at the end. And then there's also, of course, the fighting itself. So how did the writing happen, and how did that affect the creative process for choreographing the fights?
From Vlad's approach, you know, he generally, like myself, like we may have an idea. We don't necessarily write the script out, but let's say we may have like a treatment, I guess, version of it, where we understand the A, B, and C of where the story is going to go. So Vlad kind of did that on the plane heading to Chicago. And then when he got there the first night and we kind of rehearsed, again, we did this very loose example of what would be the apartment fight the first night. That was the first thing we shot. And then from there, that's kind of like where we ebb and flow things very much to Hong Kong cinema, right? Like in Hong Kong, you always hear about there's no script half the time, or the script's being rewritten as they go. And honestly, that's not much different than productions anywhere. It's just that there, exactly, you may literally never see pages until the day of. You know, you may literally never know anything about the fight until the day of. And that's really the approach a lot of us have done. So when Vlad brought that to the table his way, that was exactly what myself and Sean Bernal, the other co-star, took is, you know, we're like, hey, you're going to do it your way and we're just going to be open to it. And, you know, we'll go and we'll chime in when we need to, but, yeah, just lead us and we'll go with it. And that's really what Vlad did. And I think, again, just being open to the process of it and changing the character ever so slightly. Like, for example, Vlad had made Sean's character, you know, the kind of conductor look. Mm-hmm. He made my character, let's say, more like the Terminator, the opposite. You know, one is very flowy and one is very sharp initially. But at the same time, my sharpness is hard and Sean's flowiness is very, you know, eclectic and sharp in his way, you know, once he commits to an action. So when we collide at the end, Vlad was like, oh, it's again, it's like the A and B of the same thing, you know, like Sean's the A and I'm the B. But when we did that fight, I think the first day, the initial like 4 hours was trying to figure out the style because we've set the style of both characters. But now Vlad's conundrum was, how do we contrast that in the fight? And then how do we show the evolution of how I kind of come up and then Sean beats me and then what do I do to embrace or change differently in the character that throws Sean off and how I eventually beat him? It's like, how do we do that? Because otherwise, if we just fight the same way, then it's kind of the same old song. You know, it's like, how do we figure out to bring out these nuances in the characters? And Vlad was trying to do something different stylistically at the time. So whatever we shot the first 4 hours, eventually we figured it out. We had to scrap that. And then we had to shoot the rest, you know, 4 hours, redoing that and then getting how much scenes we could do. So then the second day, we finished the fight. So I think, for example, in like 4 or 5 hours, we did everything from where we first meet on that little bridge all the way to where Sean knocks me down in like 4 hours, 5 hours. Wow. And mind you, like I said, we already shot 4 hours already and had to completely scrap that to, you know, to redo it.
That's crazy.
But that's kind of, yeah, that's like what we do as indie guys. You know, we're so used to that kind of marathon style because that's all we know, you know? So when I started working with other people, needless to say, a lot of people are very shocked by that mentality and style. So I've had to adapt it a few times, but yeah. Just being open to what Vlad wanted really, I think, made that short and made it what it is. You know, it was really his vision of it.
And so looking back on it, I know you said you really had to work to try and get, again, that contrast in that final fight and also that turn for your character from getting beaten and thrown down to then coming back up with that new sort of style or that new sort of mindset. Do you feel like retrospectively you hit that mark, or do you think there's things you could have done a lot better?
I'm always going to err on the side of there's definitely things I felt personally I could have done a lot better. You know, I felt the way that Vlad created it and presented it is great. And even editing it, you know, it was very cool to edit someone else's vision and kind of get their mind on it. But, you know, again, I'm not an actor, and I bless Vlad for really pushing and believing in me to sell that character. But I'm always like, when I watch myself, you know, so there's definitely things I guess just overall, of course, I wish I could do a little better. But I think either way, for what the story was, I felt like we sold it effectively in the time frame we did it.
And is that your sort of preferred style of action filmmaking, that really striking, heavy, almost kung fu choreography?
Yes and no. I think for me, over the years now, as I've gotten older, it's like, I've tried to figure out, I guess, what my style is, quote unquote. But I think for me, it's mixing what Hong Kong cinema has in terms of cadence and tempo and rhythm and applying the dramatic sensibilities of Korean action cinema, you know, or sometimes even Japanese action cinema, where the intent is very clear, you know, the emotion is very clear, the body language is very clear. And I guess I love kind of seeing fights where even if they start very aesthetically pleasing or really technical, they just kind of eventually crash and burn, you know, physically, because that's what happens, right? Like, any, again, if you watch a real fight, that's generally what happens. The fighters come out in the first two or three rounds, if even, maybe more like the first round and a half, they're pretty sharp and they're trying to feel each other out. But then by the end, they're very weathered and they very much just want it to be over. You know, like they want the whole enduring conflict to just finish, which I think is very human, right? If you're ever in a conflicting situation, everyone kind of starts at their peak, but if it continues to endure, it just becomes very tiring, you know, to eventually find out who wins. So yeah, I think just mixing those Hong Kong and Korean sensibilities together in performance and choreography, that's kind of what I really like, you know?
Yeah, and that, you know, like you're saying, that shift in character over time, that one major shift that your character has after getting beaten down, then coming back, you're hearing that score kick in from the beginning.
Yep.
How is that from an acting perspective? Is that tough to do?
Yes, because, you know, of course, Vlad's like, yeah, so it's like this. And now think that way. And I'm like, all right, I hope I'm doing it, you know, because, you know, again, I'm not an actor. I've seen a lot of amazing actors have amazing processes. And to me, like, that's their strength, right? That's their ability as an actor to on a dime become someone else and just immediately immerse themselves in the character and find even the slightest nuance in the variety of that character sometimes. And to me, that's such an amazing gift to see, whether personally or on screen. So to kind of, you know, you're tired and you're trying to figure out the choreography and all of a sudden it's like, okay, and now do this. And you're like, yes, you know, like I understand, but how, you know, it's hard. I hope I did it okay. But I give a lot of credit to, especially actors like Keanu or Charlize or any of these physical actors that, you know, they have to act through the whole fight. I mean, again,
yeah,
that's...
They're emoting through it, yeah.
Exactly. They're emoting besides the physicality. And I totally understand when an actor finds it extremely difficult to do both, because it is difficult. There's a reason why a lot of actors look like they're doing choreography and then go back to their character, because if it's so jarring to them, it's very fight or flight, right? They're just trying to get through what they have to endure. So they're going to get through it. And then the moment they come, they're like, oh, I can breathe. I'll be this character again. You know, the hardest part is to bridge that gap. So yeah, it's not easy. Some people have it difficult to do the same thing. You know, they might be amazing athletic performers and will do 2 minutes of choreography without breaking a sweat, but then you tell them to act in between and all of a sudden it's like you cut off half their body. You know, and they're like, oh, what do I do?
Yeah.
So, it's very difficult.
And if I could, I just have to ask, because In the Mood for Love, one of my all-time favorite films, using that theme very prominently in the short film, whose song choice was that?
That was definitely Vlad's.
Fantastic. Gotcha, gotcha.
Fantastic choice. And that, you know, again, that's Vlad's mind. And that's what I love too about working with him is we may like the same films and he will find some pieces or some things to take from the same film to use it in a different way that I would never think of doing, you know? And I think, again, that speaks to his creativity and working with someone like that. You know, I've worked with very few people, even professionally, that have thought very similar ways. And it's nothing against the people that, you know, that don't think that way. It's just like, I think it really speaks to those kinds of people that really think outside of that box that has helped shape me into what I've become as well. And, or even to pursue what my thoughts are out of the box, you know, because I've seen them do it. So I'm 100%. Like, okay, you know, maybe I should try that and see what it's like. So yeah, that's all Vlad for sure.